Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Live from Brooklyn, New York, welcome to
Fun Man About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. There's a lot of stuff happening in New York right now. It's a very exciting month. It's July. It's really, really hot. Actually, we just had some insanely hot weather this weekend. But it's all tasting good with the beer. Next week, some stuff's happening. What's happening? Saturday.
It's a breezy 91, by the way.
A breezy
7 p.m.
Oh, so
on a Monday night in Brooklyn.
Oh, right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to give you a little scope, this is our first real heat wave of New York City summer. First up, so Chris and I will be attending and probably judging.
We're judging, yeah.
This great event at Gun Hill Brewing, which is in the Bronx. So it's called Limited, a homebrew competition and art exhibition. It is July 25th. They're going to have 5 local artists showcasing limited edition artwork. They're going to have 15 homebrewers vying for the inaugural Gun Hill homebrew title. And there will be a people's champ. So voting begins at 4:30 and ends at 8. They're going to have...
They call it people's champ?
Yeah. And it's only $3. So to enter your voting, and that includes a Gun Hill tasting glass and samples of all 15 homebrewers. There's also going to be delicious jerk chicken and live reggae music after the People's Champ has been chosen. So it should be a fun day at Gun Hill. I actually haven't been there yet and have been wanting to go, so I'm pretty excited.
I have not been there either, but Void of Light is an incredible, incredible beer and was won gold in the, it wasn't Imperial Stout, it was Foreign Extra Stout.
I think so, at GABF last year. But they took home a gold with their first year of brewing.
So they're considering canning.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm excited about that. I mean, it's a lot of beer for one little can.
Yes. Yeah, but you know what? I just saw that Port Jeff actually has a Russian Imperial Stout in cans. I saw it at Covenhoven on Friday night. So people are putting all kinds of beers in cans. All right, so I want to give a big shout out. So Kuzme headed to Philly. Friend has a beautiful new recording studio.
Rittenhouse Soundworks. If you need any work, or if you're a musician and need a studio to record at, Rittenhouse Soundworks in Philly, in Germantown area, close to Mount Airy, actually not too far from Earth and Bread Brewery. It is an awesome facility. Rittenhouse Soundworks, look them up.
So I tagged along. I had a day to play. So I tagged along and started at the art museum, moved down to Sonny's for a killer cheesesteak, which I haven't had in a while.
I thought you were going to have beer today.
I love it. At that point, it was beer. So I did, I made a point to seek out as much local beers as I could. Right a couple blocks down from Sonny's, which is Old City, Old Town. What do they call it in Philly?
Old City.
Was Second Story Brewing, which actually took over the old Triumph space. I don't know if you guys have been to Triumph. But anyway, they were doing some really nice beers. I had a flight. I got to give big props. They had their Pennsylvania Lager, their 5 Mile Ale, Tilted Barn Farmhouse Ale, and Evolve IPA number 6. And I will say the PA Lager, I was super impressed because they were using 100% barley and rye that was grown and malted in Pennsylvania. So it's always cool to see, travel a little bit outside of New York City and see brewers, making really nice beers with local malt. From there, I actually decided to walk up to Johnny Brenda's, which is, I think, just under 2 miles, but it was a beautiful evening by that time. I didn't realize, but Standard Tap was on the way, so I stopped in there for a Tired Hands. And then finally went to Johnny Brenda's, and I had another tasting flight at Johnny Brenda's, and I was super impressed. I got to give a big shout out because I had... the Sly Fox Sawtown Standard Lager, which we never, I don't think we...
Sawtown.
I don't know if we even get that in New York City, but that was just straight up solid Vienna lager. I had the St. Benjamin Brewing Company Liaison Saison. That's a lavender saison from a pretty new brewery in Philly. The Tired Hands Fuzzy Green IPA. And then I had a Commonwealth Cider's Gregarious Ginger Cider. So those last three are all brewed in Philly, or all made in Philly, I believe.
Let's go back to the lavender. So lavender and saison.
Yes, it was outstanding. I was so impressed. First of all, I love lavender. I know, you know, it's a love-hate kind of thing with people. It's kind of like cilantro. I'm a big lavender lover. But it is, you know, those flavors are tricky to do in beers. And man, I got to say, I was super impressed. And then the fuzzy green turned out to be a cucumber IPA. Now, I had a couple cucumber beers.
I don't think you should eat fuzzy cucumbers, though. I think that, you know, they've turned.
No, but they're fuzzy when they first come out, see, I think. I don't know. That's what made me think of.
I've never seen
a cucumber
leaves
are
hatch.
The leaves are fuzzy, too. But anyway, so Tired Hands, absolutely outstanding job on the cucumber IPA. And then the Gregarious Ginger Cider from Commonwealth was really tasty, too. It was very dry, and it had a really nice, spicy ginger bite. So I was impressed with all of those beers. Inspired enough, I actually picked up some cucumbers on the way home today. I'm going to go home and make a cucumber short mead. I think there's a lavender short mead in my recipe in my book, but I want to do a lavender lemon fermented soda. So just lavender lemon, a little bit of organic white table sugar, champagne yeast. And then I had something else on my list I was going to make. Inspired by yesterday or Saturday. Anyway, great time in Philly. If you haven't been to Philadelphia, I mean, I only hit a couple of spots, but I had some outstanding beers. We did actually round up. I got one more. I got a sour beer at Earth at the very end of the night before Chris drove us back.
Earth and Bread Brewery.
Yeah. So I have to say, I just love Tom Philly. Baker, it's such a great... I'm so happy that we live in New York City and can just go and spend the day in Philly. I mean, Philly's like an hour and a half to 2 hours from us. So much to do. And anyway, I can't wait to go back.
City of brotherly love. All right. And that's where everything started. I wouldn't know you if I didn't live in Philly for a second and start homebrewing down there. Speaking of homebrewing and speaking of pro brewing and speaking of today and this show and New York and we have in the house today an old friend of ours, Brett Taylor. Brett Taylor, how you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Today's special for a couple of reasons. I've been a longtime fan of your beers and what you do with them. Brett, you are aptly named with your affinity for Brettanomyces. And I'm also excited that you just finished the American Brewers Guild course, the Intensive Science Brewing Science and Engineering course, right?
Yes.
And congratulations on
Thank
that.
You. Yeah, it was amazing. And I'm joining an incredible group of basically a ton of New York City brewers have graduated. And it's I feel like I'm in the club now.
It's fun. Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Yeah, thank you.
But that was a really valuable experience. We'll get back to that. Totally. But let's talk more about, you know, leading up to that. And you, even just before this, I didn't realize you had any brewing or pro brewing experience or even times in that. But you did some time at Six Point for a brief moment.
Yeah, just a little while back in 2011. Worked with Ian when he was there. You know, just cleaning kegs, scrubbing, doing basic cellar work.
But you were familiar with a pro brewery before getting to that. But definitely. Where did your homebrewing start? Where did this love of homebrewing thing happen for you?
Carroll Gardens. And honestly, I think that it was I kind of got caught up in the whole New York City craft thing. And I kind of lived, Six Point was my local brewery. And there was a point where it felt like if you weren't drinking Six Point, you were sort of not. You didn't have your Brooklyn cred or something, you know,
still
back
that
in 06 or 07. And so I was, but it was, you know, it wasn't polished beer like you were getting from macro breweries. You weren't getting like filtered beer that was just crystal clear. And something about it felt doable. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was so fresh and it just felt like I want to do this. So that's when I started homebrewing.
And I met you at one of either Brooklyn Wart or one of the other like homebrew competitions that are open to the public, and you were serving, I think it was 100% Brettanomyces fermented beer, and this was a while ago.
Yeah,
I mean before actually that might have been one of the first primary Brett fermented beers I ever had, and I was like, what is this? It was super interesting and drinkable, and and your name is Brett too. So I was like, oh, this guy Brett, he makes Brett beers.
I got lucky there. I got lucky actually, because I was in line to be Wilbur Earl the Fourth, yeah. And fortunately, somebody stepped in and gave me a name that you know,
Wilbur Earl the Fourth. So is that your father and your father's father? And your,
yeah,
Wilbur Earl
the way back.
Wow,
yeah,
man!
Yeah, and to the 1800s. Yeah.
Do you think that Wilbur the First homebrewed or brewed?
Probably. I don't think so, but yeah. I don't know much about. I met him, but I was really small, so I was like this big.
So he didn't let you taste of his mug.
He I think it was probably whiskey or something from the hills of Pennsylvania, if anything. But I fell in love with Britannomyces because I fell in love with sour beer, and I was like, what? I mean, all right, I get it, it's sour, but like, what else about it? And I somehow came to realize that it was the Britannomyces that was giving it the character that I really loved. And then I experienced it with hops, and I was like, whoa, that's totally different. It's like it's super fruity, and it gets really dry, and it works nicely with hops, and it does cool things. So I was like, I need to explore this.
When did you first start homebrewing?
January 2010.
And then when did you start playing around with Brett?
About a year and a half later.
Yeah, so pretty early on.
Once I dialed in, dialed in my process and realized, understood what I was doing, I started playing with Brett. And the first beer was I made the regular spice pumpkin beer, but I fermented it with a Brett Lambicus and a Brett Bruxellus. And I took
together
that
at the same time.
Just one of each, primaried with that, and then I took it to over to Jason Saylor's house, some other people were there, and they all loved it, and they were like, "Wow, this is so good!" So then I aged it out for like a year, and it was even better because a lot of the spice character like got really subdued, and the Brett character, the Lambicus, gave it a nice tartness, and it became a very lovely beer. Now I want to do it in a bourbon barrel.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, where were you getting your Brett back then?
Oh, Brooklyn Homebrew. I got all my Brett from Brooklyn Homebrew. I sort of have switched now. I'm a Yeast Bay guy.
Mm-hmm.
I basically use their stuff almost exclusively these days.
Got to shout Brooklyn Homebrew out.
Yeah.
Love them. They're closing in a few days now. Mm-hmm. Coming up, week and a half.
Leaving a crater.
Yes.
In this city.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in New York City. And I wish Daniel and Benjamin the best of luck. They're going to move on to another exciting venture of some sort.
Yeah.
So, Brett, you started with, tell the Brett strains again.
Just the Y's Lambicus and the Bruxellus.
And then tell us a little bit more, like how, because I think you've done Wits, you've done all kinds of beers, right?
Yeah. So I have a wit beer that I'd like to do with the Brussels blend from the East Bay. I've done it a couple different ways, but that's what I really like now. And I feel like the fruit character from that yeast blend, along with the coriander and all the fruit peel and everything, just works so well. And it's a beer that's lovely when it's young. It's a nice frothy, fruity wit beer, but then it ages out to become like a really nice, basically a blonde ale. It's works really well for me.
What is the shortest Brett ferment that you've gotten?
I've done it in 3 weeks, but it's there's way too many cells in suspension.
Sure.
Still. It's mostly at terminal gravity. It gets to the point where it wants to just go into that slow ride that Brett does when you're making like a sour. It's drinkable. It tastes like what it's going to taste like as a young beer, and it's good, but,
Would you say you're a patient man?
I would say so.
You're going to have to be with this.
The key is, whenever you have a tendency, you get a sour in a barrel, you probably know this, Mary. You just, when you get a sour in a barrel and you have a tendency, you want to touch it, just go buy a new fermenter and make something else.
Yes. Just forget. That's put it in the back of wherever you're fermenting and forget about it.
That's right.
Cover with a t-shirt and forget about
it. and put a, like, I'm not allowed to touch this before X date, like, rule on it. And that'll get you through.
We're going to take a very, very short break and come back to Ferment About It and talk more about how you hop, how your approach to hops.
Well, I
want to
know about
dancing,
Brett Strains and how you go about it. So more about Brewing with Britannomyces with Brett Taylor after the break.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Foment About It. We're here in the studio with our really great friend, who is aptly named Brett Taylor. He has an affinity for Brettanomyces strains and brewing with Brett. And tell us more about the strains, your favorite strains, and
some of your experiments, because I think a lot of people, that's something I've done a lot of, like secondary fermenting or co-fermenting or aging with, you know, Brettanomyces and Pediococcus and Lacto, etc. But I haven't done much primary, and I've been wanting to for a while, but the book was, you know, kept me occupied. But what if somebody wants to brew? Well, first of all, what are the advantages of brewing with Brettanomyces in primary? Or like, what, you know, why do you do it?
Why do I do it?
Yeah.
I like the character that I get from it. I like the fact that the beer can be one thing at, you know, at 4 weeks, and it can be a completely different beer at a year.
It's like an everlasting gobstopper.
Totally, totally. I mean, you know, the benefits of bread are it helps clean up dissolved oxygen and just, you know, it acts as a preservative. It keeps you safe from, or helps to keep you safe from staling. Those are some of the benefits.
And it also adds different, like, aromas and flavors depending on the strain.
Yes, totally. Honestly, and I don't know enough yet to speak in really specific details, but you get different pHs and different pitch counts give you different flavors and aromas as well. That's kind of what my study is right now, is figuring, is really dialing in that and understanding it well.
So what are a couple of your favorite Brettanomyces? So if somebody asks you, hey, you know what, I'm a home brewer, I've been, you know, brewing with just straight up sack yeast for a while, mm-hmm. I want to try to ferment with Brett. Mm-hmm. What would you advise them?
Well, it depends on the beer. I did that Brett, that brown ale last year for Pride of Brooklyn. It was just a regular brown ale that I made a really big Dechner's wort, and it stopped at like 10-18, and then I pitched Brett Lambicus because I wanted that pie cherry sort of tartness to work with the dark toasty malts, and then it was going to all go into a bourbon barrel because I wanted the interplay between this sort of spicy vanilla thing in the bourbon barrel, along with that sort of cherryish Brett character and what the dark malts bring to that beer. So if you're looking for something that you want to get a little bit of a tart cherry kind of character, obviously you want to go for the Lambicus. If you want to get that sort of, if you want to go for really subtle, you know, you go for the Brett Clauzeny. You don't get a lot of like wild funk off of that. I myself have been using lately the Brussels blend from the East Bay. I find that, you know, on three successive pitches with that, I made a Saison, an IPA, and a wheat beer, and I got characters that were reminiscent of those styles with that. I got a nice phenolic character in the Saison, the wit beer gave me I got fruity character from that. And in the IPA, I was able to get, you know, a nice fruity character that blended well with northeast or northwest hops.
Yeah, I want to know your hopping techniques for brewing with Brett.
It's actually pretty similar to my regular hopping technique, which is lots and lots of hops in the whirlpool.
That's a late addition.
Yeah, a lot of late addition. A lot of times with a Brett beer, I won't do a bittering addition. I'll just do it all in the last 20 minutes.
Okay. Right.
Because you're going to get a little more attenuation and you're going to get a little higher degree of bitterness, just of apparent bitterness or perceived bitterness.
What do you make a starter? So when you do primary, you always make a starter, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what I'm trying to do. If I'm going to age something out, like my saison these days is, I just throw vials in. It's saison yeast, it's Brett blend, and it's lacto brevis, and it just you just let that roll. That all goes together. I don't want a big pitch count with that, but with a Brett. Usually, I'm looking for something close to a lager pitch rate, to keep it from getting super funky.
So the saison you're just 5 gallon batches,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. you're using how many vials of this?
Generally, I'll do for the all Brett saison, I'll do usually one vial that I double step because their pitch rates their pitch counts in the East Bay are they're basically White Labs pitch counts, and they're really low. So yeah, I usually double step those, so I get something a lot of cells that are active on a stir plate and warm. Usually, I'll put that on a stir plate with a little heating pad around it, and then get that rocking. And
so you're looking at what, like lower 80s for your starter?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm usually up there and they just go crazy. And then, you know, Chad Jacobson would probably be going, no. But the guy from Crooked Stave, that is, who's the master.
Yeah.
Literally of...
Britannomyces.
The master's degree of Britannomyces. But yeah, I mean, I find big pitch count, control your temperature, and I like to go with a little bit lower, with a little lower pH, because I feel like it makes it all a little touch of like tartness behind that, and even in a hoppy beer, not sour, but it just brightens the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm. And how are you using brewing salts, or how are you manipulating your pH?
I usually just use gypsum.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't go too low with it. I mean, I have some citric, but I don't.
Right. You don't do anything after the fact with acids or anything?
No.
Yeah.
Only if I'm, you know, going to pitch lacto.
Right.
Yeah.
I have given up the practice of kettle souring entirely.
Mary's mad at you.
No, so. I think there's some for everybody out there.
I agree. There are some great...
If we didn't have you, then we would have less to taste.
I know. They give me... Brooklyn Homebrew gives me Pediococcus for free because nobody uses it except me. So
it's pretty tricky to use. I mean... So where do you... Let's talk about where do you use Pediococcus?
Just in my secondaries and my barrels, yeah.
But mostly with barrel...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if in a barrel situation, whether it be an actual barrel or a secondary fermenter. Yeah.
You live here in New York, mm-hmm. and you're talking about barrels. Mm-hmm. What size are your barrels?
5 gallon barrels.
5 gallon barrels. Yeah, the yeah. Kings County
mm-hmm.
guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got them sprayed around the house.
Yeah.
So we have a source. We have actually, thanks to the New York Farm Distillery Law, and that's what it's called, right? Anyway, we have a lot of distilleries here in New York City, and Kings County is one that's really generous in selling mm-hmm. their barrels for very reasonable prices to a lot of homebrewers.
Yeah.
So big shout out to them.
Totally.
Colin Spelm, you to man.
Yeah. I got into it because I was like, I need to learn how to manage barrels.
Right.
And so, yeah. Plus, you know, now I do a lot of the sours I'm doing now are like, I'm doing primary fermentation. I do the whole thing in the barrel. I got such lovely bugs living in those things that like, I just want a little primary, like a little saccharo to go in there with it and put a blow off on it and let what's in there go to town, which is kind of living the dream now.
So you've already put in you've already put in. So originally, when you got these barrels, how did you prep them?
I prepped them by putting Imperial Stout in them for a very short period of time, and taking away,
just straight up Imperial Stout with Saccharomyces.
Okay. And then I remove that pretty quickly, and that cleans out some of the very strong bourbon and oak character, and then
in a way that's still usable.
So short period of time. What? How many days?
I think usually 2 weeks, something like that. My threshold for what is over the top is a little higher or something. I don't know.
But that's good. These are always things to think about, because I think when you're a home brewer has not used barrels before, I mean, a lot of these very fresh barrels will impart a lot of alcohol and wood. Yeah. And you have to be very careful, unless you want to end up blending, If you're kind of flushing that barrel a little bit, so to speak, it's something to think about. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually bought the barrels intending that they would be blending beers, because I figured, these beers are going to get too sharp too quickly, and I wasn't going to get the Brett character that I want from them. And actually, it hasn't been the case. The last two were their sort of cuvee beers. I just bottled them straight as they are. So yeah.
So then after the Russian Imperial Stout, mm-hmm. then did you start with your buggy beers?
I did with one of them, and the other one I was going to keep around for clean beers. But then they're in the same room, and I learned lessons about how bugs move between barrels. Also, a very important lesson. And then my reaction to that was, I did a little dance because it was awesome that I like that like.
It results
my bedroom. My bedroom. Actually, whenever I move out of this apartment, I think I'm just going to advertise it as like, you could cool ship in my bedroom.
There you go. That's awesome. When did you decide to go to the American Brewers Guild?
When did I decide to go to the American Brewers Guild?
Why did you go to the American Brewers Guild? Do you have...
Looking for a career change? Yeah, definitely. Right on. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, Tyler March and I are working on a brewery project with mostly Brettanomyces. And I was like, even if I fail miserably at that, this is still a career change for me. I'm not gonna go back to my old job. I'm ready to move on, mm-hmm. and so I'm like, what do I need to do that? And it's brewing school, and it was right there. It was such an easy thing to do. You just had to have gotten some okay science grades and passable science grades in college, and then
go deep into it.
Yes.
It's a 26-week course. 23.
I think.
I don't remember whether it was 23 or 26. It certainly felt like 26 if it was 23.
It felt like 38.
but it was all awesome. Having the videos forever.
Yeah.
I still use them as resources.
That's good to know. They're awesome. And there's something to be said for that, because like if we had gone to lecture, it would have been whoever they could get there at that time. But when you watch the DVDs, you're getting like the best in the business. Matt mm-hmm. Brindleton, come on. You know what I mean? Like, who gets him as a professor?
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
Pretty fantastic.
And I could go on the list of like big names. It's just everybody's a super, is like an all-star.
I will say, a couple weeks ago, I walk in the bedroom, we're getting ready to go to bed, Chris is already in bed, and I'm like, what are you watching? You were watching an ABG video.
That's right. That's right. I was getting ready for you. They make me hot. Steve Parks, I love you. I feel dirty. That shouldn't be, Liz, that should not be the quote that goes on the website.
Let's briefly mention, what's your next school that you're going to?
Hop School.
Yes.
I'm going too.
So I went to Hop and Brew School put on by Hop Union last year, and I went to the Nano Brewery and Dome Brew School. It's a two-day affair in Yakima on premise, and you go around the hop fields. I think there are still tickets if you go to hopunion.com and then look up Hop and Brew School.
Yep.
And I spent the whole time there being like, oh, Mary, we'd totally dig this. I really wish you were here. And now you're going this year, but I'm going to the other session. I'm going to the first session, the 15 barrel and above.
Yeah,
the pro brewer.
There's
going
to be like at least three to five. Well, there's five New Yorkers actually signed up to go to to our Nano.
At least that we know of.
So we're bringing a
good
contingent
times.
This year.
Yeah, we're taking over.
Subject to change. Join us. Join us.
That's right.
Meet us there.
So talk a little bit about Yeast Bay and why you use those before we wrap up.
Oh, yeah. So actually, that ties back to your earlier question about the blends. Their blends are really nice. They don't go crazy on me when you use them for successive batches. I don't know how he balances them. He's not very, you know, he's got a day job and he responds very quickly to emails, but he doesn't really talk too much about what he's got in them. But I love they have one called Amalgamation, and I use that in my, you know, barrel aged type sours or actual barrel aged sours, and it gives you that like that nice that sort of burnt rubber sulfur kind of thing you get from like a Cantillon Goose.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I always say like the petrol. I always get like petrol. Yes, yes. I know exactly where to buy. Yeah, like,
Love that. Petrol.
Now, how soon are you getting that? Is it, because that's usually, you know, that's a like an aroma and flavor I always associate with aged Rieslings, yeah, right? Or some of these aged Gouzes as well.
Got it 3 months on a farm on a saison, an Albrecht saison that I added that to. He you know, he's a lot of lacto brevis PDO and his mixes are good, like multiple lacto and PDO and his strains are, excuse me, he doesn't say what they're, he suggests like a blend from taken from a Brussels brewery, which I read as Cantillon, and then one from a beer cell brewery, which I read as Dreyfontaine. They work really nicely. I'm a fan.
And that's a much more economical way to get a nice mixture, mm-hmm, rather than buying individual packets, because that was always something before we've had some of these smaller yeast and bacteria, yeast companies crop up, is that if you want to do a blend, you either had to use bottle dregs,
right,
or, you know, you had to buy like 5 smack packs or vials in order to get a nice blend. I mean, some of they did come out with the occasional blend, but we're really lucky now in that we have people like East Bay or East Coast Yeast that are doing blends for us.
Yes. Yeah. I'd love to use East Coast Yeast. I've used it one time. In a golden sour, aka, you know, lambic style, but it's in progress, and I have no idea what it's just so hard to get.
Yeah.
I would love to use it, but so I gotta go to the West Coast, but he does an awesome job.
Now you're talking about successive pitches. So, mm-hmm, you're taking this yeast cake and, mm-hmm, then using it. So what are you doing? Are you washing? Or are you just?
I just give it a little rinse, get the crap off the top, and then pitch it into the next batch.
Cool.
I don't have a microscope yet, so I'm not.
What do you mean by rinse? How do you do that?
Oh, just into like a jar or Erlenmeyer flask and some distilled water on top so that it, mm-hmm, settles, and then I decant the stuff that's either hop and break material, and then the stuff
top
that looks
layer
like peanut
that.
Butter. Yeah, just the crap on top, and then you have the nice like whitish
slurry,
like healthy looking slurry.
Yeah.
Slurry.
Yeah, the slurry. Yeah,
the milkshake.
Beauty. Yeah, yeah.
And so you've been using these. So you said you repitched up to 3 times.
I have repitched up to. I've repitched up to 5 times with the Brussels blend from there. The wit beer that I did for a recent thing wasn't that well received, so I'm thinking I might have been gone a little long. I think it was the Pride of Brooklyn this year.
Now, so when you're, how long are you leaving these on before you're repitching? I mean, before you're, you know, racking off and then can use that yeast and bacteria cake.
So I actually I haven't done a lot of repitching with yeast and bacteria. A lot of times I'll add new bacteria, which is weird because it's the thing that lasts.
Mm-hmm.
Brett obviously lasts too. But yeah, it depends on if I feel like I need to get it. If I need the yeast out from under it, then I'll move it. If it's like 3-4 weeks or whatever, it can't hurt to go to a secondary for a little while to settle out.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is with that, the Brussels blend from the East Bay settles beautifully.
So it flocculates really nicely.
It flocculates very nicely, but it takes a very long time.
Okay.
It's crystal clear, and my Albrecht Saison it can get really nicely clear.
Awesome.
Have you brewed anything with SAC again since your first Brett beer?
Oh yes, I still, you know, I do a Pilsner. It's kind of my German Pilsner. It's kind of my canary in the coal mine to make sure my system's clean.
Yep,
make sure what comes out.
It's a litmus test. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I love the beer, but like it's just so that I know what's coming out of that, because I use the Blickman heat exchanger, but you can't open it up. It's a plate chiller, but you can't open it. So it's a leap of faith that I'm getting it clean.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that what comes out of there is
chemically. That's awesome.
Yeah,
so once you go, Brett, you can come back.
You can.
Of course.
Separate hoses. Keep it, all the plastic, anything. You got to keep them separated. Keep them color coded. And I brew like sacro beer once every 2 months. And I keep that stuff like in a very nice cabinet. I treat it like it's gold. And the Brett stuff, which gets used like 3 times a month, gets thrown in this like bag in the corner and gets treated poorly. But you know, it's it works for me. So.
Yeah,
it's all hand-me-down stuff anyway, right? Clean stuff goes to Brett stuff. Goes to Brett and Bug stuff. So.
Well, our new show mission is to find a guy named Sack so we can talk about clean brewing and predictable things.
You might be able to find a guy from Ireland named O'Mices more easily.
That's amazing. Yes. Yeah, an Irish guy named Sack O'Mices. That'd be amazing. Well done. And with that, thank you for joining us, Brett Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Awesome to have you. We're so excited to have you here.
And hopefully some of you out there are inspired to start playing around with some mixes
and to go to the American Brewers Guild.
Yeah, do that.
And Hop School. So there is.
And Hop School. Yeah, come join us at Hop School.
Absolutely. They're still opening, so.
We want to thank our engineer, Liz Smith, today for her fantastic work today and every week and every day here at Heritage Radio Network. What a wonderful lady that lady is. Even though she's giving me the finger. It wasn't the finger you're thinking. Never mind, audience. You're great, too. She wasn't giving you that finger either.
Tell me about today's break music, Kuzme.
Today's break music and the show theme song are actually outtakes from a former band that I am involved in called Chris Berry and Pangea. Chris Berry is an incredible mbira player. What'd you say, Chris? Oh, I said, beer. Ah. So that little tinkling noise in the thing, that's a really strange instrument from Zimbabwe called the mbira. It's on piano. It's pretty cool.
Hey, and we want to give a big thanks to all of you listeners for tuning in. If you liked what you heard tonight, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes and feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Next up, we got a teaser clip of Chef Marco Canora sharing some snack hacks on the food scene. Another great show found right here on Heritage Radio Network.
There's so much misinformation out there, and everybody thinks that eating well needs to be surrounded with deprivation. And it's like, it's not deprivation at all. Like, I'm a fucking hedonist.
Chef Marco Canora shares some snack hacks on episode 226 of The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel.
I love food. I eat food like crazy. I don't need to be hungry to eat food. It is just like a huge part of my life. And, you know, a lot of people are afraid of this idea of eating well because they think that you turn your back on all that stuff. And no, it doesn't mean you turn your back on loving food. It just means you have to educate yourself and think differently about it.
So when you think of popcorn, do you instantly think, oh, that's fiber. That's going to clear me out.
I think about popcorn and then I say, well, let's make sure I put the right fat on it. And let's make sure, you know, I'm getting a good quality popcorn that's not some kind of highly mass-produced GMO popcorn. And then it's great popcorn, and I'll grate some really good pecorino cheese on it and put a boatload of black pepper on it and put a big hunk of really good grass-fed butter on it and some nice sea salt. And, man, it's fucking delicious, decadent popcorn that I could eat a tub of it until I'm sick. And I'm not going to feel so bad about it, right?
Because of you now cachu y pepeing something is like a verb in our house.
Right.
We always have that hunk of pecorino.
This was an excerpt from episode 226 of The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel. Did you like it? The Food Scene episodes are available on our website or on iTunes. Dig in for more. This piece was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.